everybody. My name is Ben Putley. I am the CEO and co-founder of Alchemy. It's my absolute pleasure today to be joined by Dr. Lisa Cameron, MP in the House of Commons. Lisa, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, thank you so much, Ben. I'm Lisa, Dr. Cameron. I was an MP in the House of Commons from 2015 to 2024. Mm-hmm. And during that time, I had the privilege to chair and to found the first all-party parliamentary group for cryptocurrency in the parliament. Yeah.
Quite a significant step that. I think we were talking briefly before, and the UK as a services-based economy, kind of crypto is the perfect kind of amphitheater to do that. And I think it's amazing, really, that you took the step to start that and have politicians and government talk more seriously about the application of blockchain to finance and other sectors, I think, more importantly. It'd be great to kind of hear a little bit about some of the conversations you were having, the work that you did, and kind of as part of the chairman of that group.
Yeah, so I mean, it was back in 2022. Mm. One of my constituents had approached me. He had lost money, actually, from cryptocurrency scam, which I now know is a rug pull scam. And said to me, can you find out who in the parliament is doing work in this sector and put me in touch? And I said, well, of course, I'll do that. Started to look to see what was happening in Parliament. And at that point, at the beginning of 22, in the House of Commons, we'd had absolutely no debates ever on cryptocurrency. So I wasn't really sure who to approach. I decided to check to see if there were any groups that might be linked with this. There was no all-party parliamentary group on cryptocurrency looking at regulation or consumer protection, any of those issues. So I went back to him, and I thought, well, perhaps he's a kind of unfortunate individual, and you know, it's a one-off type case. Mm. And he said, no, there's lots of people involved in cryptocurrency in the UK. I spoke to some of the other members of parliament, and, you know, there was a lot of negative press around about the sector at that time. And they were saying, no, the UK is not doing that. It's all a scam. So I went to look at the research and found that, you know, even at that point in time, around 4 million people across the UK were involved in the sector. So I said, well, you know, went back to my colleagues and said, well, we can't really be saying that no one's doing it and the UK is not doing it, because, you know, there are millions of people doing it.
Yeah.
And actually the MPs and everybody were quite surprised by this. So we decided to form the group initially with more of a focus on a sort of regulatory compliance perspective, which has been at the core of what we've been looking at in terms of consumer protection. But as that developed, I had the opportunity to go to Zug to meet with legislators and regulators there to learn about the opportunities in the industry, the economic opportunities, but also just the, you know, our world is becoming much more digital. And of course, that's going to impact finance. Yeah, I mean, the group was very successful, actually. So over the 2.5 years that it run, 2022 to 2024, Greengage were doing a kind of review, digital parliamentarians. And in 2022, there hadn't been any debates on the subject. I mean, people had mentioned it occasionally in Parliament, but nothing substantial. By 2024, Greengage, you know, we're talking about 200 to 300 mentions in the Parliament. So it shows if you have a special interest group in Parliament, it helps to harness the potential of the industry. It improves the understanding and awareness of the members of Parliament, of the sector. And I think it also engages business with the Parliament so that we can understand the economic potential as well for growth moving forward, and why this is just a really important sector. And actually, we would be doing a disservice to constituents across the UK if we didn't have a focus on it in Parliament. Yeah. But well done to you for the progress you've made.
I'd love to understand a bit more about what really piqued your interest in blockchain. Like, what was your journey to setting up the APPG?
Yeah, so we had the constituent with the issues, mm-hmm. and then I thought, well, we need to have some regulatory clarity. I started to attend a lot of industry events because we didn't really have a very good sort of basis of knowledge in Parliament about the sector,
yeah.
what it could do, what difference it would make, what are the use cases. Mm-hmm. Going to Zug was quite a pivotal time because they were explaining to me it's not just about finance. They explained the connections with blockchain technology, with AI, with Web3, that this was all going to converge and that basically it's going to change a lot of the way we do things. In our everyday lives, you know, it could have implications, the blockchain technology for health records, mm-hmm. for instance.
Yeah.
There could be changes in the way housing transactions are mm-hmm. done. Also, I mean, in terms of tokenization, it's had implications for sport and art and culture. Yeah. So, I mean, this is just massive. When you think of an industrial revolution, it's actually bigger than that
yeah.
because it's not just industry, it's actually culture as well.
Certainly.
And then I think one of the most pivotal things was we had the Children's Parliament come speak to us. So the kids were there from they represent all the different areas of the UK. And they were there from I think from round about age 12 up to 16. And we had MPs in the room, we had members of the House of Lords. And one of the questions was, who understands Web3? Mm. And all the kids put their hands up, right? And then not so many MPs had their hands up. Mm. And hardly any members of the House of Lords had their hands up. And it was just really a kind of stark moment where you thought, or where it came to my mind anyway, that we have a digital generation.
Yeah, certainly.
So this is crucial for their future. It's crucial for jobs of the future, which are going to be different from the types of jobs
yeah.
when I grew up. We need to make sure our education system's geared up, our university and college systems, apprenticeships are all shifting in this direction. We need to make sure the fundamentals are there to skill our population. And they also kind of said as well, because they were really pragmatic, they said, well, this could change the way we learn in school. Mm. With some of the technology, we could, be on the precipice of a volcano and seeing what that's like. Or we could go back in time to Henry VIII's court and experience what that would be like. But they said to us, but you need to make it safe. And we need to know more about how long we should be, engaged in kind of virtual world as well for our education and or how it would impact our mental health. So I think it just made me see how vital this is for the next generation and also economically for the jobs that we need to create in the UK. So all of those factors. And plus, just it's been very exhilarating being in an industry which is really on the cusp of being mainstream and all of the developments that are happening. So all of that combined, meant that it was such an important thing to focus on in Parliament. Yeah. And I did look at some research about a year ago by PitchBook that had said when the MiCA regulatory framework was being developed in the EU, that it was actually generating a lot of opportunity and business there.
Yeah.
So I think regulatory clarity is not just good for consumer protection, it's also good for investors.
Certainly,
as well.
Yeah. And where do you think the UK is as far as that, getting regulations in place that allow for confidence with people that want to work in crypto and then confidence in people that want to invest in crypto, because you kind of need those two together for there to be a really successful market.
Yeah, so when I was doing the work in Parliament initially, the Prime Minister at the time had set the expectation that the UK could become a hub of cryptocurrency. So we're really working to that agenda, trying to kind of foster the progress that we needed. which I think was very important. We did, you know, financial services markets bill came through, the FinProm regulations came through, some things were coming through. There was a statement on central bank digital currency as well. Although at the time I noticed with interest, because many of the people who were wanting to speak and the statement I'd spoken with before it, and such a lot of disinformation or lack of understanding, so lots of the questions to the minister, even in the statement, was about, you know, but this isn't backed by anything, it's just a scam, and the minister had to keep saying, well, it's a central bank digital currency, so it's backed by the central bank. So even just, you know, underlying premises, we needed to do so much education for all of our colleagues, and, you know, and I had such a huge educational curve to climb as well. So I think we've come quite far. I think the political direction, we've kept it very, I mean, the group wasn't partisan at all. It's very cross-party, and I wanted that because I know in some other jurisdictions at that point in time it had been quite partisan, which I don't think had helped industry or progressing the aims of, you know, making us a hub. It wouldn't have been helpful for it to be partisan. So I worked really hard on that, so that obviously when the next government came along, that, you know, there was a grounding of people who had some understanding, who had been working together, who could take this forward continually and keep the momentum going. You know, there's been further announcements from the new government, but some of the issues that we really had were kind of fundamental issues. Okay. So although politically, you know, the direction was positive, people were saying their engagement in the UK being, you know, regulated here by the FCA, it was taking an inordinate amount of time and resource, and often they felt communication was poor, they didn't understand what was needed. Other jurisdictions were making things more streamlined, and so therefore we're becoming more competitive to, you know, against the UK. Even things like companies trying to set up bank accounts, fundamental thing. How can you be a hub if companies who want to set up here can't have a bank account and pay their staff?
So there's challenging
things that were on the implementation side I felt really needed to get up to speed with the policy direction, and I still feel that that's going to be really crucial. That the FCA and the government work together in order to pull this together and continue the momentum, and actually probably subsequent to the US election, speed it up as well.
I would agree. It does feel like there has been like a radical step change. Like it's been reflected in the market somewhat. Like Bitcoin is the highest it's ever been. Well, the internet was invented by a Brit, so Tim Berners-Lee, albeit in CERN in California, but without being too reductive, blockchain and crypto is internet money, you know, so it feels quite poetic that we should have a bigger role to play, given that it was a Brit that invented the internet, and that is the major way, the only thing that really makes it possible. And I think it's surprising to me that no one had spoken about it in Parliament, because I've been in crypto since 2016, I would say, and we were talking about alchemy and 2017, 2018, and then it kind of became, there was actually a study that was done by the Internet Advertising Bureau. So they are a body that regulates to some degree the way in which ads are traded online. So they are the authors of a standard called OpenRTB. And all that is just a way that data is organized between servers, so that when an ad loads on a particular website, it's being sent to buyers in a way that's organized and isn't unique. Right. So it's kind of, there's some continuity between the way people are buying ads. They looked into blockchain in 2018 and the potential for it to solve some of the issues with digital advertising, which are generally there's a lack of transparency. So you can't see who's taking fees, why they're taking fees, how much those fees are.
Right.
The fees are very high. So there's, I mean, through two other studies, it's anywhere between 43% and up of dollar value is taken by people that sit in the middle. So quite a intensive fee. And it produces a lot of emissions, more than the aviation industry, unfortunately. But the IAB decided in 2018, and I think it was perhaps a slight misunderstanding around the time in which a transaction has to be finalized. So when you are using crypto and you want to send wallet A to wallet B, that happens within inside of 20 minutes. But when you buy an advertising campaign, you typically book it, it runs, and then you pay for it for a period thereafter. So you don't have to have that immediate settlement of a transaction necessarily. But what you would benefit from, and this is something that we talk to a lot of people that use Alchemy, is the transparency that's afforded by it. So you can see exactly what's going on. We've been able to distribute the cost of the infrastructure. So we have a decentralized network. We have over 1,200 validators. So we don't bear the cost in the same way that centralized companies do. So our fees are much lower. We're 10 times cheaper than what you would see from a Web2 exchange, if you want to call it that. We're 4 years old now. So that's in 2020 when we started really doing that. And now we've been successful in winning some really great clients. We work with agencies like IPG and Group M and Publicis, and we work with Coca-Cola, who are now starting to see the benefits of using a blockchain to buy ads. So I think it's the work you did really kind of set the ball in motion for what I hope is more conversations that happen in Parliament about the application of blockchain to certain technology. There's some amazing statistics that have come out of the ETFs that have launched in America, is what I think of particularly. And I think BlackRock's Bitcoin ETF now has a higher dollar value than their gold ETF. And
right.
I think if you look at the adoption of certain types of technology, you had the internet, which was adopted fairly quickly. You had mobile phones, which were adopted even faster. And the adoption of blockchain is outstripping both of those, which... it makes sense. Like, they're stood on the shoulders of two giants. And I've been to, there's Solana have something called the Super Team, which is where they basically have an office space. I think they're just going to move around the corner to Liverpool Street. But, and people are just showing up and working on Solana's blockchain, which is amazing to see that there is like energy and vigor for people to want to solve problems. And I think particularly with developers, when they see a better solution to challenges they faced in what they in old technology they were developing with, and they find the new solution, they just don't think about the old solution anymore. And I think that will continue to accelerate. But you're right, it does need the right framework, because at least I experienced this, was when you start doing blockchain or crypto, you are just like immediately thrown into not even the deep end of the pool, but just like the sea, you know. And it's like there's some massive whales or sharks, whatever the idea you want to be, but you're swimming with like people that have been doing it for a very long time. The learning curve is super steep, and I think the quicker you can flatten that learning curve and have people learn about it sooner, I think the better, frankly, for fostering the great talent that we have here in the UK.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that is, I guess, it's where it was quite a partisan issue. So when the government changes in the way it does in America, it then changes quite dramatically, quite quickly, because everything changes really quickly. Yeah. So, but I think often the UK's always worked very closely with America, and I think that should provide some tailwinds where perhaps it had been headwinds in the past for...
Yeah, I think that helps with the impetus, doesn't it?
Certainly, yeah.
And I think probably with the engagement of Elon Musk as well in the US, things are going to have much more of a tech focus, is my impression. And therefore, I think this industry, is going to go from strength to strength quite quickly globally.
Yeah, I agree, because it's talking about Alchemy for a second. We're fundamentally, we support people that are spending money on ads, right? And America is one of the, if not the biggest market that spends money on ads globally. And it's, we'd always been a bit wary of that because of the way that the regulations weren't clear, you know, and that when you're trying to plan more than 6 to 12 months in advance as running a business, you won't take that risk on, really. And I'm a British person. We have an office in the UK. I love working in the UK. And the UK is also a very big ad market. Talking previously before, a lot of campaigns are planned from London across Europe. So it's key in kind of the European strategy for a lot of brands is planned from London. And then kind of then locally, there's often some like specific ways to speak to certain markets that local planners understand. But like the main strategy tends to come from the UK. Mm-hmm. So there's a big opportunity for the UK to kind of grow its share of the ad dollars that are managed here versus perhaps somewhere else or at least wherever it may be. And I would hope that Alchemy can help the UK continue to do that. You know, we're talking about a big market, but I think by 2028, there'll be $1 trillion that's spent on ads online. It's like it's not small potatoes, and people often, there seems to be less focus on the ad market versus like financial markets because it's got more uses. But
I think like part of that is because the parliamentarians were just getting up to speed with some of the fintech use cases and obviously then broadening it out. I mean, we did some work in the parliament highlighting even, you know, other issues like UNICEF using blockchain technology for aid and fund transfer, and the transparency around about that gets to the most vulnerable person. You can show the taxpayer where it's gone. You can have more of a sense of security that it's being used for the right purpose. So there's so many different use cases, and I think that's probably where we're at now, including your own service and so many others, is demonstrating these use cases to parliamentarians so that their education continues to build. And obviously with a general election this year, we had a huge turnover of MPs, so we're not quite sure, I don't think, at the current time as to where the base level of education is. And it might be that some of the foundation level type of awareness raising education is also very important just now at this stage, just to rebuild that.
Myself, just the third time I'll be there, I will feel a bit more confident, you know, kind of like know the drill, you know how to go in there and you know where to go and you kind of know what to expect, and that just allows you to feel a little bit more open with about perhaps what you'd share and what you wouldn't share and that kind of thing.
And of course the really exciting thing about the UK Parliament is, well, I mean, it's known as the mother of all parliaments, but it's actually the people's parliament more than it is the politicians' parliament, so you should feel able to go in and out and you know, and it's there for people right across the UK to engage with. And I think probably one of the positive things from the group has been, you know, increasing that level of engagement generally with the industry. Subsequent to moving from Parliament myself in May, because education was a huge part of what I was doing, and because when I started, and I'd explained to you that, you know, nothing much had been happening in the Parliament at the time, I felt quite isolated doing this stuff myself. So what I've been doing since is I've founded the Global Legislators Forum in Digital Assets, and that's like, I suppose like an APPG, but it's not bound to one Parliament, so it brings legislators together from all different Parliaments to speak about shared best practice, because this is a global industry. And one of the things is that, you know, when you're in the Parliament in the UK, for instance, you might not know what's happening in the UAE or what's happening in Japan or Singapore or what's happening in the US. And, you know, I think we need to be up to speed with what's happening in multiple jurisdictions to share principles and standards, but also so that jurisdictions understand how quickly this is moving as a sector.
It is, lightning. I always think that when we're not moving forward, it does feel like we're moving backwards in this sector, because it's one of the things that makes it so interesting. Actually, I do feel very fortunate. I've been able to co-found a business that is building on this technology that I think is going to change the way, well, for us specifically, the way in which ads are bought online.
Yeah.
And I've worked in ad tech my entire career, so it's cool that I get to do this job. I enjoy it very much. But it does, you look out the window and you're like, oh my God, they've done this one thing and they've done that thing and this company's doing this and they're doing that, and some of the numbers involved in it are astronomical, and you're like, bloody hell, I need to get the numbers up a little bit, you know. So it's
And I want MPs in the UK Parliament to speak with counterparts elsewhere so they understand the need to move at pace, because I do want the UK to be a hub.
Yeah,
I think this technology is vital for the future of most economies, you know, which are I mean, we're going to live in a digital world, so the UK has to be at the forefront of that from my perspective, and therefore the more that people can engage with their counterparts in other parliaments, the more they can understand how quickly policy is being developed, regulatory standards, perhaps think about competitiveness and you know what we need to do in a bespoke way for the UK.
Because I think just geographically, the UK is positioned so well. Like, I always find this, I can speak to people that are east in the mornings and then west in the evenings, and you can have like quite an expansive conversation just in terms of where people are that you're speaking to and how easily you can get to places as well from here too. You know, it's like it's perfectly positioned to be the hub of it, as you say, right?
Absolutely. And I think the thing is, we've got like common law, you know, have so many sort of positives in terms of the level of fintech development already in London and right across the UK, and reputationally as well. The skills that are here, universities that we have, and, you know, obviously, I suppose there are a number of languages that are used commonly across the world, but English is really, you know, one of the most prominent of those, if not the most prominent. So we have a lot of advantages.
Certainly,
and there's no reason we shouldn't be there at the forefront.
Yeah, I agree. The sector's going, like, regulatory-wise, or however you want to answer the question, really, on its current trajectory, and like, where would you like to see it? What trajectory would you like it to be on? And what do you need to be done to kind of up the ante a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the main thing that we perhaps hadn't resolved at the time the Parliament dissolved for the election was the kind of the implementation aspects.
Okay.
Companies being regulated here, how quickly that could be done.
Yeah.
You know, not with a kind of lowering the bar, but, you know, with good actors who wanted to be compliant, how can we engage more with them? How can we make sure that the companies who want to be here can stay here?
Mm-hmm.
Because my concern throughout the whole summer has been, and into, you know, the autumn, has been dialogue with organisations who want to be in the UK but feel that they, you know, might be a better place going to another jurisdiction at this point in time. So I think we have quite a small window of opportunity, and we need to therefore get the kind of practical things in place that businesses are saying, this is an issue for me remaining or coming to the UK, and really seriously looking at those things and making sure they're in line with the political drive to move things forward.
So the table stakes really needs to be sorted out for it to, as you say, even become a hub, because, it can be.
Yeah, access to banking. Although when I was over in Paris, they were telling me that, you know, in the French regulatory system, if you're regulated there, then access to banking is kind of built into that.
Right.
So then you kind of think, well, that makes it easier for companies to be there, perhaps, you know. And so what do we need to do to make sure that we're on a level playing field?
Yeah.
They obviously also have a kind of grandparenting route into MiCA, which is a huge, you know, EU base. So we need to be thinking about how do we make things that we're doing interoperable as well.
Yeah.
So I think there's quite a lot of kind of foundational work that needs to be done.
And do you think there's appetite in government for it at the moment? Or do you think that there's other sectors which are perhaps a bit shy? My mind jumps to AI, for example, that are perhaps a bit shinier than blockchain. Or do you think there is an appetite for it?
Well, for me, it's kind of like the one sector, in a sense.
Yeah.
I don't see that you could work on AI in isolation from looking at digitization and Web3 and blockchain, and because it's, as I say, there's going to be a kind of convergence
certainly,
of all of this. And, you know, so I was at an event the other week where someone was telling me about quantum, which I'm not up to speed with.
Yeah,
so I feel like this is all, it's going to all work together to create the use cases. So there's no point in siphoning things off and saying, well, this is about AI and this is about this. And this. We need to have a kind of overall approach, I think, as to the sector as a whole and how we fundamentally attract businesses here to develop these use cases and be the innovators. And then we'll see how AI... and, you know, blockchain. And so, for instance, even like looking at health cases, I was speaking to counterparts in other jurisdictions who were telling me about health records on the blockchain. So that's something new. We're looking at, you know, real world assets like housing transactions. Yep. I've been doing some work with CodeLab and they're, you know, looking at tokenizing property. We've tokenized an amazing apartment on the Thames. So, and then with AI, I was asked to launch something called avatar therapy, which is a mental health therapy. So all of these things are kind of working in unison, aren't they, to try and make things more seamless and easier for our everyday lives, you know, so that we can perhaps have the avatar therapy as a pilot, obviously, but it looks like it's got good outcomes. That's it might suit some people who may be on a waiting list waiting to see a therapist. So there's lots of ways that we need to integrate all of this together. Once those sorts of underlying issues are, you know, addressed, and I'm sure there are others that industry could bring to the table, then, you know, it's really about looking at what's happening elsewhere and kind of a, what works bespoke regulatory regime that's probably quite light touch, I would think, compared to some others on regulation, but is still, you know, of a high reputable standard. So getting that balance right is going to be really important, because what I want to see is a shift from what's being said to me just now, that businesses want to be here but they're moving elsewhere, to that businesses want to be here and not just are they staying here but they're coming here. Right, so I think that's where I want to have the you know, what's happening at the end. And I think, like, from a governmental point of view, it's not just about, I mean, I started off 2022 asking questions to Treasury, which I continued to do. But by 2024, we were asking questions to education. We were asking questions to science and technology. We were asking questions to the department that deals with UK aid. We were, you know, actually with the vast use cases, there's not a department that shouldn't be getting questions about this type of technology.
Yeah, certainly. I'm going to speak with Dame Meg Hillier tomorrow. She's our constituent. So I'll be telling her about Alchemy, and I think she's the chairperson of the Treasury, if I'm right.
So, she is, and she's such a very established member of parliament who does excellent work. She was previously chair of another select committee, did great work with that. Very sensible MP, who I'm sure she'll be very keen to hear all about your business development.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's a lot of parliament in 1 week, I have to say. But
you'll be all parliamenty.
I will, yeah. But Dr. Cameron, thank you so much for having a conversation with me. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I wish you all the best with your future efforts, and you're welcome back anytime.
Oh, thank you so much, and it'll be a pleasure to hear how you get on as well. I'm sure you'll go from strength to strength.
I'll keep you updated.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Thanks.
If you enjoyed that conversation and you're worried about the future of the cookie, click the card on screen to hear Laurie and I talk about replacements for the cookie in the future and how Digitas are thinking about targeting their customers without cookies existing in the future.